Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Chicago, Chicago, that toddling town.
Is tea Chicago, time on the Savage Nation. Chicago, both to tee off the liberals and to celebrate a victory finally for the truth. Chicago, truth, justice, and the American way. Although Obama the Magnificent has tried to Chicagoize America, he has been stopped dead in his tracks. His halo has crashed to the ground. Could you play Frank for a minute now? Loud, loud. Come on, give it to him.
They don't do on Broadway. They have the time, the time.
Now let's hear the tea again.
I saw a man, he danced with
how
his wife
you,
in
how
Chicago.
You, how are you?
Chicago, my hometown.
Thank you, Frank.
Chicago,
thank you, Frank.
Chicago,
thank you, Frank. Well, what can we say that we haven't said already? It was up on my website on the Dashiell Dash immediately, and it's good. Good for America that, you know, this is interesting because both the left and the right attack Dashiell, rightly so. Even the Salon magazine, which is extremely liberal, had terrible things to say about the couple, the Dashiells feeding at the Beltway Trough, and the tax thing was just too much for even Chicago Obama to put up with. But this was two in one day. There was some woman, Nancy Kellefer, who knows, she had 1 minute of fame today for tax. But what is this with Obama and tax problems? Maybe the government will come to understand, really, that all of us can have tax problems if they want us to. You know, we have the most complicated tax code outside of Sicily, and consequently, they can nail anybody to a cross anytime they want with this tax nightmare. So in a way, that's an issue. Maybe one of the benefits of all of this is the government might get its act together and simplify the tax code instead of making everybody into a tax scofflaw. That would be a nice outcome, wouldn't it? But you know that won't happen. That's the way they keep you on the hook. Distraught Dashiell got teary. Acorn gets $2 million from bailed out Bank of America. Did you know that? Oh, yeah. Oh, it's all on the website. It's too early for me to begin telling you about the stories, but I will anyway, because there's one I don't want you to miss. There's a slob, a picture of an evil slob, halfway down on the right, a 27-year-old vermin who was let out of jail 2 years ago after raping boys, who pled guilty to raping a 6-year-old boy in a public library. Take a look at this guy. He waxes his eyebrows. Now, wait a minute. I'm going to have to control what I want to say, what should be done to this piece of human garbage. But I'm going to reserve my anger for the judge, who I think the judge should be put into prison, frankly, along with this rapist. And I'll tell you why. I think that the judges who do these things themselves are perverts. There's no other explanation for this. And let me explain why. We know liberals have sympathy for the devil. That's a given. We understand all of that. That's a cue play, Sympathy for the Devil by Mick Jagger. And don't bother. But here's a 27-year-old who was arrested January 30 after luring a 6-year-old boy to the magazine stacks in the New Bedford library while the child's mother worked in a computer just a few feet away. Now listen what the little boy said to a child welfare official. He said being assaulted was like being attacked by a T-Rex and an alligator. Now the vermin who did this to the kid was on probation after serving 4 years in prison for the attempted rape of another 7-year-old boy. Wait, here it gets worse. This is, you're not going to believe. Saunders, the rapist, had been released in 06 despite objections from prosecutors who are allowed under Massachusetts law to ask that sex offenders be locked up indefinitely after completing their prison terms, three psychologists who normally would side with the rapist actually supported the commitment request. They said keep him in because he can't control himself. But the perverted judge granted him probation. And you want to hear the reason the perverted judge granted this sicko probation? He cited the sicko's lack of sexual crimes while in prison. Listen, you sick judge, you. There were no six-year-old boys in prison. Now, I want to ask you who the judge is. Who is the judge? Does anyone know the judge's name? No. It's being hidden from the story. On Monday, Bristol County DA Sam Sutter sought a life sentence because of the victim's age and Saunders' earlier conviction. His defense attorney asked for probation again. The judge, so-called, did not immediately set a sentencing date. Who is the judge? Is there anybody in Massachusetts who can call this show right now from New Bedford or the area and tell us who is the judge who released this man who raped the six-year-old boy? Who is this judge? I'd like to know his name. We need to start a campaign to have the judge removed and arrested and see what the judge's private life is all about. Man pleads guilty to raping boy in public library. Now, I could ask you what you think should happen to him, but I know what you think should happen to the rapist. Go take a look at the guy's picture on my website. That's all. You won't see it in your paper. You won't even see the word boy, by the way. What you're going to see is man pleads guilty to raping child in library. The reason they don't want you to know is that a man and a boy is because most man-boy love association members write for newspapers. For some reason, they're drawn to newspaper work. I don't quite... If it's not teaching itself, it's newspaper work. And the third profession that the Man-Boy Love Association seems to go into is anyone you want them to go into. There's nothing else in the news other than the triumph of the day. I mean, there is triumph today that Obama's halo has come crashing to the floor. Oh, yes, there is one other story I'd like to point out to you on the Savage Nation. This you're not going to believe. So if you think that you had a victory today in seeing this corrupt Daschle get it finally and get withdrawn, you're right. You had a victory, but wait till you see the illness of liberalism in England and what's coming to America. Here's the headline from the Catholic news agency linked up on michaelsavage.com. Grandparents lose custody of children to homosexual couple. That's right. Two British grandparents aged 59 and 46 have been told that they're too old and unfit to care for their grandchildren who are to be placed with an adoptive homosexual couple. I am not kidding you. This is what England has become. Play There's No England Anymore. That I know you have. Edinburgh. Oh, it's in Scotland. It's in Scotland. The children had been in their grandparents' care during their mother's struggles with heroin. According to the People, the council threatened to hire expensive lawyers, causing the grandparents to abandon their legal fight. The grandparents are in tears. The 59-year-old grandfather and his 46-year-old wife said it was the worst day in his life when the grandchildren were taken away and given to homosexuals. They said if we had known how it would turn out that social workers would choose a home without a mother for them and we'd have to like it or not see them again, we'd never have given up the fight, their grandmother said. So the government in Scotland has stolen grandchildren from grandparents in order to give them away to homosexuals. Isn't it nice, don't ask, don't tell? If you only understood where don't ask, don't tell will lead, you'll understand why Obama must be stopped at every turn. And you should also understand how important it is that you fight Obama every time he's wrong. He was so wrong on his five executive orders. First thing he did, close Gitmo. Second or third thing he did was grant constitutional protections to those who would slash your granddaughter's throat. It is unbelievable to me that he would hire one tax cheat after another. But you should understand that the withdrawal of Daschle as nominee to head HHS is a victory for America, a victory for conservatives, but most particularly a victory for the Savage Nation. You who are longtime listeners to this show should know that it's not the first victory we've had. When G.W. Bush tried to give away our port security to Dubai, you stopped it. When Kennedy McCain tried to shove amnesty for illegal aliens down the throats of the American people, you stopped it. When Bush appointed an inexperienced liberal woman to the Supreme Court, Harriet Myers, his personal attorney from Texas, it was the Savage Nation that put the pressure on and Myers' name was withdrawn. Time and time again, you, the listeners, have seen the power of this program. That is the power of real conservatives banding together for a common cause. We are the last bulwark against the rising tide of insane liberalism, and today is another triumph. Today is another triumph. You see, nominating three liberals in a row who refuse to pay taxes themselves, in spite of the fact that they demand an increased tax burden for you, was too much hypocrisy for even Obama to stand. So the fact of the matter is, Obama's halo has fallen off his head. The aura of sainthood and invincibility is gone forever. And America, even liberal America, the honest liberals, are finally awakening to the fact that Obama is not the Messiah that they thought he was. You can call on this, I suppose, but there's no point in talking about it much anymore. There's nothing new to be talked about here. Other than it ties into Obama trying to push the stimulus plan down the throats of America. But you see, if you look at it carefully, it's about 8 or 9% meat and about 90 to 91% fat. And that has to be stopped as well. The Senate must stop this grotesque, fat-infused stimulus plan. I don't think you understand this, but a new poll shows that the majority of Americans want the Senate to reject the so-called stimulus package because they've seen through Obama's deceit. They understand that this is nothing but a gargantuan liberal spending program. And when you have only 8 or 9% job creation and 90 to 91% pork, you understand the American people are not that stupid. Don't you understand that? So now you have to fight Obama on the so-called stimulus plan before it's too late, and it's a done deal. Do you understand this or not? 1-800-449-8255. Coming soon to your state in the United States of America is welfare agencies forcing straight grandparents to give up their children to homosexual couples in the name of diversity. This is what socialism does. This is what socialism has done to Europe. It has pulled Europe into the sewer. It is the result of non-representative activists gaining political power and shamelessly imposing their perverted narrow views on the general public. And let me tell you something. Obama is a non-representative activist, as far as I'm concerned, simply put up to the presidency by all the powers that may be. But you know, Humpty Dumpty sat on a wall. Even Humpty Dumpty had a great fall. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Let me talk about chicken feet and hyaluronic acid. I mean, that was a big hit yesterday. The world threw a chicken foot that if you go to a market, you can't even find a chicken with chicken feet unless you're Chinese or go to a Chinese market. Because the crooks in every business, there are crooks. Every business in America is run by greed. So far as I can, most businesses, most big businesses are run by crooked people who are sucking the life out of the country. Look at the bankers. What, there's something new about bankers being crooks? The Bible warned against usury. You're shocked that the bankers are usurers? Oh, you're shocked all of a sudden. Thousands of years ago, they were known as greedy bums. What's different today? They run America, that's all. This country wasn't founded by bankers, but it's sure been run by them. And not the best of bankers either. But even a chicken foot you can't get anymore in a chicken. They steal it from you and sell it to a soup company. Can you imagine? It's unbelievable to me. That's why I talked about the world through a chicken foot yesterday. But Daschle is an example of the king has no clothes. Daschle is an example of the story or the story about the clay feet. You know, the king, the man has clay feet. What do you think it means, the story of the clay feet? Obama is a fiction. Obama is a creation of the media. Obama is a creation of the world media. Obama is a multiracial man who, it looks to me, has never had no said to him. This is a child who was given everything on a silver platter. He was a bright guy, could speak well, learn well, memorize well, knew how to navigate his way around the ultra-left wing of Hawaii, got a scholarship to Punahou, got into a Harvard on affirmative action, was selected for one thing after another. No one ever stood up to him and said anything to him. You could see when he gets rejected on anything, the guy looks lost. I mean, I'm an observer of reality. He looked shaken today, and not for the first time, when he went off script. He doesn't understand the world he's in. The guy is over his head. He reaches out to Ahmadinejad, the Hitler of our time, and the guy the next day, Ahmadinejad, says it shows America's weak. He closes Gitmo. They ask him where he's putting the prisoners. He doesn't know. He appoints one tax dodger after another, doesn't understand the American people are not going to accept it, and they don't accept it. Even the New York Times turns on him. And this is within 2 weeks. I told you yesterday that he is going to be seen as the president with the shortest honeymoon of any president in modern history. And if you were to poll the American people today, he doesn't have these sky-high approval ratings that the vermin in the media are telling you he has. Oh, yeah, sky-high approval ratings from when? From before they saw the man in action? He doesn't have sky-high approval ratings. The guy is being seen for what he is. That's my opinion. Florida, Jerry, you're on the Savage Nation. What do you think? Go ahead, please.
Hello, Dr. Savage. My name is Jerry, and I did vote for Obama. As a matter of fact, I gave $100 to his campaign thinking that, this man was going to make a difference. I would have given this man several thousand dollars to help reduce our government debt, but yet all he wants to do is go out there and spend $1 trillion and get us deeper in debt. I'm truly disappointed with my decision. Just as easily as we voted him into office, I think we can vote him out of office, and they better beware.
Well, you're not saying that if he keeps this up, there's going to be an impeachment call within a year, because it could happen, you know.
You know, I've already thought about putting out for bumper stickers that say impeach Obama.
What's interesting is that 47 million Americans said no to Obama. I would estimate 10 million people went over to the other side out of just pure unmitigated disgust for the Republican Party, not because they wanted to embrace Obama. And I would say that there may be a majority in America who would want this man impeached, but not yet. Once they come to understand how radical he is, how off the charts of even the Democrat plan he is, once they see through who this man is, there could be calls for impeachment within a year. It could happen. I'm not saying it could happen today, but it could happen. And I'm saying to you that Obama better get in the center of the Democrat Party and stop running it from the far left, because the American people have had enough of this extremism, and we've had it in 2 weeks. 5 executive orders in less than a week. You know that?
And he's not hiding a thing. He is just totally open and outright with it.
Well, there you go. We'll have to wait and see. The phone number is 1-800-449-8255. The website's michaelsavage.com. This is the ideal leader in talk radio, the Savage Nation. If you care to call, go ahead and try. We might get to you sometime today, and I might give away a copy of Psychological Nudity to Liberals Only.
Savage.
I want to read you a fable entitled The Emperor's New Clothes by Hans Christian Andersen. This was written in the 1800s about another leader of his time who was vain and who thought he was the Messiah. But apparently the story writer, the storyteller Hans Christian Andersen, saw through him. And so he wrote this fable because he was afraid of being arrested. There was, I guess, the worst in the fairness doctrine in place then, where criticizing the emperor was probably punishable by imprisonment, as, of course, Emperor Obama may enact here, because he also is vain. But I want to read this to you. The Emperor's New Clothes by Hans Christian Andersen, dedicated to Barack Hussein Obama. Once upon a time, there lived a vain emperor whose only worry in life was to dress in elegant clothes. He changed clothes almost every hour and loved to show them off to his people. Word of the emperor's refined habits spread over his kingdom and beyond. Two scoundrels who had heard of the emperor's vanity decided to take advantage of it. They introduced themselves at the gates of the palace with a scheme in mind. "We are two very good tailors, and after many years of research, we have invented an extraordinary method to weave a cloth so light and fine that it looks invisible. As a matter of fact, it is invisible to anyone who is too stupid and incompetent to appreciate its quality," they said. The chief of the guards heard the scoundrel's strange story and sent for the court chamberlain. The chamberlain notified the prime minister, who ran to the emperor and disclosed the incredible news. The emperor's curiosity got the better of him, and he decided to see the two scoundrels. "Besides being invisible, your highness, the cloth will be woven in colors and patterns created especially for you." The emperor gave the two men a bag of gold coins in exchange for their promise to begin working on the fabric immediately. "Just tell us what you need to get started, and we'll give it to you." The two scoundrels asked for loom, silk, gold thread, and then pretended to begin working. The emperor thought he had spent his money quite well. In addition to getting a new extraordinary suit, he would discover which of his subjects were ignorant and incompetent. A few weeks later, he called the old and wise prime minister, who was considered by everyone as a man with common sense. "Go and see how the work is proceeding," the emperor told him, "and come back to let me know." The prime minister was welcomed by the two scoundrels. "We're almost finished, but we need a lot more gold thread. Here, Excellency, admire the colors. Feel the softness." The old man bent over the loom and tried to see the fabric that was not there. He felt cold sweat on his forehead. "I can't see anything," he thought. "If I see nothing, that means I'm stupid, or worse, incompetent. If the prime minister admitted that he didn't see anything, he would be discharged from his office." "What a marvelous fabric," he said to them. "I'll certainly tell the emperor." The two scoundrels rubbed their hands gleefully. They had almost made it. More thread was requested to finish the work. Finally, the emperor received the announcement that the two tailors had come to take all the measurements needed to sew his new suit. "Come in," the emperor ordered. Even as they bowed, the two scoundrels pretended to be holding a large roll of fabric. "Here it is, Your Highness, the result of our labor," the scoundrel said. "We have worked night and day, but at last the most beautiful fabric in the world is ready for you. Look at the colors and feel how fine it is." Of course, the emperor did not see any colors and could not feel any cloth between his fingers. He panicked and felt like fainting. But luckily, the throne was right behind him and he sat down. But when he realized that no one could know that he did not see the fabric, he felt better. Nobody could find out he was stupid and incompetent. And the emperor didn't know that everybody else around him thought it did the very same thing. The farce continued as the two scoundrels had foreseen it. Once they had taken the measurements, the two began cutting the air with scissors while sewing with their needles an invisible cloth. "Your Highness, you'll have to take off your clothes to try on your new ones." The two scoundrels draped the new clothes on him and then held up a mirror. The emperor was embarrassed, but since none of his bystanders were, he felt relieved. "Yes, this is beautiful. It's a beautiful suit. And it looks very good on me," the emperor said, trying to look comfortable. "You've done a fine job." "Your Majesty," the Prime Minister said, "we have a request for you. The people have found out about this extraordinary fabric, and they're anxious to see you in your new suit." The Emperor was doubtful showing himself naked to the people, but then he abandoned his fears. After all, no one would know about it except the ignorant and the incompetent. "All right," he said, "I will grant the people this privilege." He summoned his carriage, and the ceremonial parade was formed. A group of dignitaries walked at the very front of the procession and anxiously scrutinized the faces of the people in the street. All the people had gathered in the main square, pushing and shoving to get a better look, and applause welcomed the regal procession. Everyone wanted to know how stupid or incompetent his or her neighbor was, but as the emperor passed, a strange murmur rose from the crowd. Everyone said loud enough for the others to hear, "Look at the emperor's new clothes! They're beautiful! What a marvelous train! And the colors! The colors of that beautiful fabric! I have never seen anything like it in my life!" They all tried to conceal their disappointment at not being able to see the clothes. And since nobody was willing to admit his own stupidity and incompetence, they all behaved as the two scoundrels had predicted. A child, however, who had no important job and could only see things as his eyes showed them to him, went up to the carriage. "The emperor is naked," he said. "Fool," his father reprimanded, running after him. "Don't talk nonsense." He grabbed his child and took him away. But the boy's remark, which had been heard by the bystanders, was repeated over and over again until everyone cried, "The boy is right! The emperor is naked! It's true!" The emperor realized that the people were right but could not admit to that. He thought it better to continue the procession under the illusion that anyone who couldn't see his clothes was either stupid or incompetent. And he stood stiffly on his carriage while behind him a page held his imaginary mantle. This is dedicated to Barack Hussein Obama, the emperor's new clothes. And the next time you see an Obama-Biden bumper sticker, or the next time you see an Obama-Biden lawn sign, you'll know that these are the people who would have said, "The emperor has a gorgeous, gorgeous robe." This is The Savage Nation that was written by Hans Christian Andersen in 1837, and I thought I would share it with you. Indianapolis, Christy, you're on The Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
I wanted to thank you so much for being one of the places that I can call and hear the truth.
You're welcome. That's why I'm here. You see, the truth has a certain ring to it, or else I wouldn't have survived these 15 years, Christy. And I recognize that my truth and your truth and the truths of millions of others is not the truth of all of America. But we have a way of looking at the world which refuses to be obliterated simply because a naked emperor has arisen.
Absolutely.
Thank you for the call. You see, Obama is that naked emperor. You don't understand that. This fable is written for him. He is a naked emperor. And the problem is that he thinks that everybody doesn't know it. But in fact, most people do know it. It's just the people around him who refuse to admit it. Because once they admit it, they admit that they made a mistake. You understand this or don't you? Or is even a child's fable now is too complicated for America? All right, we'll go on. WOR, New York, Ron, you're up on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Hello, Dr. Savage. Really good talking to you. I'm responding to your lead story about Tom Daschle and what the media portrayed as a taxation problem. And mm-hmm. I really have to laugh about that. I'm going to say that there are three problems in this country right now. First, Tom Daschle and the media's taxation problem. It's mm-hmm. not a taxation problem. It's a lying problem, a morality problem. And I refer to your stand on morality in many of your previous broadcasts.
Well, let's look at Daschle's tax problem. He had a car and driver provided while he was raking in millions of years as a lobbyist. This is the same Daschle who said he drives a broken old car. And he's Mr. You know, this is the thing about Marxists. The minute they get near money and they smell a buck, they become ardent capitalists. And you know, there's a negative to this, Ron, that many people haven't recognized yet. There's actually a negative to Daschle being dashed. You know what that is? Here's the strange paradox of this whole thing. We conservatives are celebrating Daschle's downfall. What we don't realize is that because he was corrupt and because he was owned by the healthcare industry, he actually probably would have stopped socialized medicine from coming in on a bullet train. You see, the far left wants socialized medicine very badly, and they actually were not going to get it from Daschle because he had been compromised. In being a lobbyist, he was actually a compromised leftist, which means he couldn't have railroaded the socialized medicine. He didn't want real health care reform. He didn't want it at all. The reason they hired him was to make sure that they didn't get a reform. And so it's actually a loss in a certain way.
Okay.
See, no one saw that, but, you know, I'm unfortunately able to see the whole picture. It's an unfortunate gift. So what's the other problem we have, Ron?
The second problem I see, which would probably in part do away with the lying and morality problem, is a term limit problem. In New Jersey, the state Senate and the assembly are looking to extend the term for state senators and assemblymen. I think there should
be... Oh, yeah, I think that they should be like Idi Amin in New Jersey and have lifetime appointments.
No. And the third problem I see is an education problem. Our current problem in this country derives from the education system.
All right. Ron, honest to God, we know all of this, and I'm not trying to be glib. We've heard a lot of this all the years. It's the codex of conservatism. But is there something specific about Daschle that you'd like to mention?
No, not anything specific other than the fact.
All right. Well, thanks for being a great listener. There's Obama now in a classroom with Michelle. He ran right away to the same classroom that Bush used. Is that a stage set classroom where they bring children in when a president gets in trouble? Remember 9/11? Bush was on a little chair in a classroom. I'm starting to think it's like the fake, like the moon thing. It could have been a stage set. Now he's being seen now in a classroom holding up a picture book with Michelle Obama. The Obamas have gone to a little classroom with children to show picture books. God, it's so predictable. Look, the fact of the matter is the president, I have told you, the new president, the Associated Press is saying the new president seen by some as arrogant. No kidding. Of course he's arrogant. The guy has gotten away his entire life with getting his way. Oh, yes, Obama. Oh, yes, Obama. Yes, Obama. Yes, Obama. Sure, Obama. What do you want, Obama? The left wing in Hawaii kissed his butt from the time they ever met him. They ran him all the way up to the White House. No one ever stood in his way. This is not Chicago. This is the bigger world. He cannot believe what he's running into here. He thought it would be Chicago all over again, where the skids are greased, and that's the end of it. And whatever they want, they launch. No, it's not happening. This is a new article. The new president is being seen by some as arrogant. What do you think I read? The king has no clothes. Just what I said. Analysis. Daschle debacle humbles Obama. No kidding. No kidding. I said his halo crashed to the ground. So now he comes out and says, I screwed up. I take responsibility for this mistake. Oh, great. Give me a break. What, that suddenly puts it behind you? Of course you screwed up. You're human. You're human, Mr. Emperor. I mean, Mr. Obama. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Talk radio. radio, if it's any good, is about commentary. And the best part of commentary is analysis that's original. I am lucky in that I have a lot of scientific training behind me. And I learned early on in graduate school how to be very succinct in what I'm saying. And I believe that my analysis is sometimes extremely valuable and unique. And right now, what I said to you at the end of the last segment about Daschle's nomination being withdrawn is actually a negative in the long run, or maybe a negative in the wrong one, is unique to the media. It will be picked up and stolen by someone before this hour is out who will take credit for it. But I want you to pay attention to what I'm going to say. The fact that Daschle, a far leftist in his early days, you know, drove the old car, Ralph Nader-esque, then suddenly gets a taste of big money. He gets paid $2 million by a lobbying firm for a year, $2 million a year. He's a big, rich lobbyist, limousine driver, and he gets corrupted, in essence, by the system, and he starts to love the money. But remember, he's getting that money from these healthcare companies for a reason. When he becomes Health and Human Services Secretary, and his task is to reform healthcare, they're going to make sure he goes as slowly as possible, and that they lose as little as possible. That's meaning they owned him. So in other words, although we're celebrating that Daschle has been thrown out because of the tax problem, in the long run, it may be a negative for us, those of us who don't want socialized medicine, because the next one is going to wind up being a far-left radical activist like Browner at the EPA, a genuine socialist, who has not yet been contaminated, so far as I can tell, by the lust for money. And so, as I say, Daschle may have been the one to actually go slower on socializing our medical system, if not derailing it altogether. So, you know, this analysis is my own. You didn't read it anywhere. It's not from any of the normal pundits. But I think it's a very good analysis. But the fact is that there is a positive to it, several positives. And one is that Obama has come down to earth. He's crashed down to earth. And many people thought that Obama was an extraordinary man. They didn't understand that he's just another politician, and that the fact of the matter is his rocket ride may be over. His no-sweat style may be over. The idea that he's a once-in-a-generation political leader who could rise above his predecessor's foibles is over. The fact of the matter is he's just another politician. And, you know, at first Obama dug in and showed loyalty and toughness in the face of critics, but it got to be too much for him. I actually believe there was more to come. I believe Daschle withdrew because more was going to come out. And those who stood up to him were telling him, look, if you withdraw now, Tom, we'll leave it alone. If you don't, it's going to come out and it won't be pretty. There's also a new leader that has emerged today. And that leader is a leader within the Republican Party. There's actually two. The biggest news here, well, amongst the fact that Daschle is out, the big news here is that Senator John Cornyn, Republican of Texas, seems to be the new de facto leader of the Republican Party. You see, Daschle apologized yesterday. He had a closed-door meeting with Senate Finance Committee members yesterday. Many senators said, oh, it's all behind them, it's going to go ahead. But Republicans made it clear that this would not happen. Senator John Cornyn, R. Texas, called on Daschle to withdraw today, this morning, just before it was announced Daschle would withdraw. Cornyn said, if Senator Daschle cares about Obama's success and the success of this new administration, he ought to remove this distraction. He was telling him something, which is, you know, this is too much. Daschle could have survived this, several demon cats said. But another tax problem was about to play out, and the combination seemed too much for the new presidency, and that was the tax problem of Nancy Killefer, also today. Less than 3 hours later, it was over. He was out. Senator John Ensign, R. Nevada, another voice in the Republican Party that's emerged, said, the fact that President Obama has said that he wants to stop the revolving door, that he doesn't want lobbyists as part of his administration, well, I don't know how you get paid $2 million by a lobbying firm and not call yourself a lobbyist. So you see, we are having an impact. They're hearing us, and we are starting to see the toughness of some of the real conservatives are starting to emerge. It's happening. 1-800-449-8255. The Emperor has no clothes. New York City, WOR. John, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hey, Michael, thank you very much for a great birthday present. That was a great, great story. And you showed the people that are on the Obama train that they are the followers, the sheep that they are. It's just incredible. It was a great, great story.
Well, I wouldn't say we're the only ones. There was a huge outcry in the media over Daschle. This started from the left and the right. Even they had had enough of this guy.
Yeah.
Well, all right. Well, did you enjoy the king has no, the emperor has no clothes?
Emperor has no clothes. It was just great. I was laughing the whole time.
Did you learn the emperor? Did you read? Wait, I'm going to ask you something. Was the emperor has no clothes? Was that read to you when you were a school child?
No, it was
no.
not.
No, it was not, because they were afraid to criticize Bill Clinton, probably, when you were in school. You're liable to understand a little bit too much about the political system. Well, that's why I read it to you. Some of these fables are fabulous, and frankly, it's the only thing we have right now is literature. We certainly don't have it in the punditry. You understand? West Palm Beach, Florida, Joe, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Yes.
Joe, you're on the radio.
Okay, yeah. I love the Emperor Has Have No Clothes. I believe he never had clothes. And what would really help people is the book Tragedy and Hope.
Hear about a book you like that's probably written by your brother-in-law, Mo. Please, Joe, is there anything else you'd like to say?
Well,
thanks for the call. We get it all the time. That's all. It's got to be expected. Anything else about Obama that you're a little intimidated or afraid of or don't like? Are you still of the opinion that we should give him a chance, give him 100 days? If we had listened to that brainwashing, well, give him 100 days. Don't criticize him. He's a new guy. Give him a chance. In 1 week, he passed five executive orders. 1 week, five executive orders. Try to shove a pork barrel bill down our throats that your grandchildren will be paying for. And we're supposed to give him 100 days. Had we not stood up to him, there wouldn't be a country left in 100 days. Right now, the guy is humbled. Maybe he'll start to understand this is the real world, that it's not Chicago. Play Chicago by Frank Sinatra. I'll come back on the other side of the break after a nice cup of tea, and then we'll see. That's all. How are you? How are you? How are you? Till the staff gets a song up, you can plot here.
Chicago, Chicago, that toddling town.
Savage. Chicago.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Chicago, Chicago, that toddling town. Chicago, Chicago, I will show you around. I love it, bet your bottom dollar you lose the blues in Chicago, Chicago.
Well, what works for Chicago certainly isn't working on a national platform. Welcome to the Savage Nation. The emperor has no clothes. The halo has come off. The Messiah and the Humpty Dumpty had a great fall. Welcome to the Savage Nation. Now, I'm telling you that my analysis of the Daschle dumping is unique. I don't know how long it'll be till it's picked up by the media. Someone will write a column. You'll hear it tonight from Donald Trump, maybe, on Fox News as though it's original. But it's original to me. And I don't mind that Donald listens to the show. I've heard some of the things I've said appear shortly thereafter. I'm honored, actually. He's said to be a very nice guy and a very intelligent man. But many people listen to this show and make believe I don't exist. But I'm their secret ingredient in their political factoring and their political opinion making. And that's okay. We all get it from someone. In my case, though, I get it from the heavens themselves. And I'm telling you that while we're celebrating the downfall of Daschle, and he should have gone because, unfortunately, the tax thing was too strong, and we didn't like the taint. The whole taint was no good. It may not in the long run turn out to be very good for conservative causes because Daschle, although he had been a leftist, a big leftist while he was a senator, was sort of, I'll use the right word, in my opinion, let's say tainted, corrupted is a better word, by the system in making a couple of $1 million a year, which for him is a lot of money. You got to understand, that's big money for a Marxist. $2 million a year is a lot of money to a Marxist. It's not a lot of money, really, when you think about it. To usurers, it's not a lot of money. To the usurers who run the Treasury Department, that's peanuts. But $2 million is a lot of money to a former, a Marxist. So now he's owned by the healthcare industry purveyors who he was supposed to reform. And the reason they paid him was to own him, which means that had he become HHS secretary, he would have gone slowly in the reforming of HHS, which would have been better for us. The next one is liable to be a real diehard left winger on the order of Carol Browner of the EPA, a member of the Socialist Party. So in the long run, you see, you got to watch out. You know what I'm saying? How this thing works. It's like a curveball, but you don't understand it. Well, we found out definitely that who's going to be helped by the so-called stimulus bill. And it's not the manufacturer of Viagra, so far as we know. The first beneficiaries of the stimulus bill will be Hollywood. That's right. You thought they liked him politically, and you're right. But the reason Barbara Streisand and her pals liked Obama has to do with money as much as anything else. You see, Democrats have finally found a tax cut that they like, one that puts even more money in the pockets of Barbara Streisand and the producers of Hollywood. This came to us just now. Big Hollywood opened its hearts and fat wallets to get President Obama into the White House and give Democrats both chambers of Congress, and now it's time to return to love. You see, a provision in the new stimulus bill would permit Hollywood moguls to write off 50% of the production and filming costs of big-budget films and TV shows. Let's say a film costs $10 million. I'm coming up with a low number. They can take $5 million right off the top and write it right off. Right now, only the first $15 million of production costs can be written off. And it's a rule to keep low-budget filmmakers in the U.S., which is actually a good rule. But the new stimulus bill would allow moguls to write off half the production costs. So let's say a movie costs $90 million. They could write off $45 million. Backed by Walt Disney and the MPA, the provision amounts to an estimated $246 million Hollywood tax break over 11 years. They gave nearly $20 million in campaign contributions to Demon Cats during the 08 election cycle, according to OpenSecrets.org. Republicans on Capitol Hill noted that Hollywood seems like an odd choice of a bailout since it appears to be the one industry unaffected by the current meltdown. Last month alone, Hollywood raked in a record $1 billion in box office receipts, according to industry watchers. Hey, I'm all for keeping Hollywood healthy, frankly. It's the one product we have, as vile as it is. It employs a lot of people who would be unemployable in Hollywood. They'd really be troublemakers. It's better that they only make movies. You know what I'm saying? 1-800-449-8255. MichaelSavage.com. That's the website. Well, I think you want me to talk more about Daschle? What's there to talk about? We have triumphal music in honor of Daschle withdrawing his name. We have Pavarotti singing Nessun Dorma. Let's hear that one if we can turn it off. Too high falutin for today. We have Pride Fight Victory theme. Let's see if that works. What? Wait a minute, what is this? When was this played? Super Bowl music? Pride Fight TV show. Horrible music. Ugh. Okay, it's not my cup of tea. Excuse me. Let's see what else we have. Michelle Obama on funding for schools and outlook. Why do the women always have to play like the little tea wife? Why? What was with Laura Bush being a little librarian type when we know she was a co-president? Anyone who's married for any number of years knows that it's a partnership. Well, what's the women? Why do they have to hide? What is this, the hiding? What, are we still living in the buggy whip age? We know she's a powerful woman. What is she hiding for? She ought to step out and just, do it. Laura Bush wasn't a librarian, any more than Michelle Obama's into this teaching business. Michelle Obama is a very successful, talented woman who went very far on her brains and by certain social factors, which were used to her advantage, which we all understand. And that doesn't take away from her in any way. I don't know what she has to play with the schools again. What does that have to do with anything? Las Vegas, Amy, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please. Please.
Yeah, socialism is such a nasty word to Americans. I can't stand. It's a sensible system, whatever. It's a realistic system. Europeans are clothed, fed, housed.
Hun. Now, I know that in your dear old Europe, the whiskey is supplied by the government, at least the coupons. And I know in Las Vegas, there's no shortage of drinks. You can get them for free in any casino. But before you call the show again to talk about the wonders of socialism, will you please go to your AA meeting or take Antabuse? Thank you. 1-800-449-825. What did I need a Lush for on this show? For God's sakes.
I love the socialism. Your socialism is good. You know, you go over there, it looks so happy in Europe. It's a happy place in Europe. They're all happy in Europe.
Yep, they're all happy in Europe. That's until you talk to the average Italian. Ask him what he thinks about his country being invaded by the illegal immigrants who are robbing and raping their way across their country like locusts. Ask him how happy they are in Norway about the rapes and the robberies being committed by the illegal aliens. The stuff that you don't read in the socialist-owned newspapers. Ask the average person in Europe how they love their country. Ask the average Spaniard how he feels about the subway bombings. Ask the average Londoner how he feels about his country being invaded. Ask the average Englishman how he feels about his country being overrun by illegal aliens who have now spawned so many children that they're minorities in their own country. Ask the couple in England how they feel about a socialist government, in Scotland rather, that just took away two children from grandparents in their 50s and gave them to a homosexual couple. Ask them how much they love socialism.
Will you please?
1-800-449-8255, Klamath, Oregon. Klamath, Oregon. Linda, you're on the Savage Nation. You are from Klamath, Oregon, I assume.
Yes, I am. Would you post a recommended reading list for the average American on your website?
You know, I've been asked to do that, Linda, but my tastes are so all over the map that I don't think it would be of any use. You know, I know people do this in the conservative media, but most of them don't read. Instead, they have somebody with kinky hair and big eyeglasses from NYU write the reading list for them. My reading list would encompass so many different, you mean like the books I'd recommend for you to read?
Yes.
Well, what is it you want to read about? I mean, let's start with that. What do you want to read about?
Correct.
What is the subject that you'd like to read about?
A little bit on holistic medicine, political truth.
No. Oh, that's interesting. Well, I've written many books in holistic medicine. My last books in holistic medicine were written before I began in radio. Some of them are still actually quite good and quite in touch with the time. They were so far ahead of their time that they'd actually be worth reprinting right now. I mean, I reprinted Healing Children Naturally, which I originally wrote in 1980, because the information was so far ahead of its time that many young parents need that book. So that's a good one for young parents. It's not the only one. There's certainly other good ones. But remember, I wasn't really tied to any industry at that time, and so I was free of any bias as to what I thought you should be doing. I try to use foods first. As far as politics, I mean, what is it that you're going to read that you don't already know? I mean, what is it you need to know that you don't know? Let's put it to you that way.
I don't ever want to run into you accidentally and have you think I'm an idiot and yell at me.
Oh, stop, Linda. That's cute. Now, first of all, the chances of us running into each other are very low, but I would never, ever call you an idiot because I only save that for liberals. I had one yesterday. I ran into one in Marin County, California. I was standing in a certain place on my bicycle speaking to someone I ran into. This is an amazing story. And I'm talking to this person, and a person comes up, a man, a middle-aged man, and he starts listening in on the conversation, and he wouldn't butt out. So he looked at me, he said, "Are you Michael Savage?" And I shook my head, and he put his thumb down at me. So I cursed him out, and I said, "Why don't you get a new pair of pants to go with that stupid attitude of yours? Your pants are hanging down under your skinny white behind," and on and on and on. I called him every name under the sun. Of course, he skirted away like a liberal would, or like a literal liberal scorpion would. I don't like people butting into my conversations. Do you, Linda? I certainly wouldn't do that to anybody who was polite to me. But if someone's going to attack me, why don't I have a right to tell them what I think of them? Why couldn't I give them a Bronx cheer? So I did. I thought to myself, I have to stand up for myself. I know public figures who actually take abuse in public. They're smarter than me. Thanks for the call. You know, I'll tell you the truth. I once saw the former mayor of San Francisco, Willie Brown, at the opera. And I think I went up to him and said something that wasn't really an assault. I like Willie Brown a lot. I didn't like his politics, but I thought he was an incredible politician. And I said something to him about one of his policies. I said it in a very friendly way. And he said to me with a smile, he's wearing a tuxedo. He said, well, as a public figure, he said, I guess I have to listen to any opinion. You're entitled to any opinion you may have. Now, that was a dignified way of responding. Unfortunately, for the guy I ran into yesterday, I'm not a mayor. I'm only a talk show host, and I believe in the Bronx cheer. I'll be right back. Savage. Well, here's a really big story. Apparently, Obama the Magnificent has overstepped himself again. India warns Obama over Kashmir. This is a very important story. India is now warning Obama that he risks, quote, barking up the wrong tree if he seeks to broker a settlement between Pakistan and India over the disputed territory of Kashmir. You know, Obama has enough troubles domestically. He really should stop meddling with the entire world. When is America going to learn that we can't manipulate the entire world? I thought Obama was going to bring change. Prime Minister said, I do think that we could make President Obama understand if he does nurse any such view that he is barking up the wrong tree. I think Kashmir today has become one of the quieter and safer places in this part of the world. What they're afraid of is that there's a time lapse going on here. They see that Obama has appointed people from the pre-2000 era, meaning the Clintonistas, who have been apparently trapped in amber and are bringing back ideas from pre-2000, namely, Richard Holbrooke, the troublemaker, who virtually destroyed Serbia single-handedly. So Richard Holbrooke now thinks he's going to go over and tell India to give up Kashmir to bring peace to that area, does he? I kind of doubt it. But there it is again, another egomaniac out there who thinks that the whole world is his sandbox to play with. 1-800-449-8255 is the phone number, michaelsavage.com. We are celebrating the fall to reality for the Messiah, for Obama the Magnificent. He's going to find out that America is not Chicago and that he cannot bring Chicago politics to America immediately. It may take him some time. That his aura has, if not fallen off completely, it has been tarnished. You understand this? I mean, this is a huge day for those of you out there who saw through the Emperor. And that's why I read The Emperor Has No Clothes earlier by Hans Christian Andersen. The dead white male, Hans Christian Andersen. He was a racist, of course. I mean, he wrote it knowing that one day there'd be an Obama and one day there'd be a talk show host, Michael Savage, who would read it hundreds of years from when he wrote it, because it was a conspiracy of white people to write The Emperor Has No Clothes. It was aimed strictly to embarrass people of color. You understand that? I mean, it's unfortunate, but all Europeans are racists, according to those who see it that way. And that's why it's important to have European-style socialism jammed down your throat as fast as possible so your grandchildren can be taken away from you and given to homosexual couples who are younger. Because that'll be better for your children, your grandchildren, to not be brought up in a stuffy old heterosexual grandparents' house. You got to open them up to the new world order, the new socialist world order, the new don't ask, don't tell world order of brainwashing for children. Wisconsin, David, you're on the Savage Nation.
God bless you, Dr. Savage. You're a bastion of truth. I barely escaped the mental disorder, as you so aptly put, of liberalism. My parents were both jazz artists, and it was either feast or famine as I grew up. A very interesting life, traveled a lot, born and raised in New York, moved to Florida, seedy sides of motels, you know, and posh palatial
places. I love it. I can envision the underwear on the radiator over the shower side. I could see it. The whole little whiskey bottles, the whole deal.
I mean, it went from gold brocaded couches and monkeys and parrots to not having enough money to ice in the summer in Florida.
I love it. What a great upbringing. You're a very lucky man. But no doubt they were lifetime Democrats.
Well, my parents were both very liberal. And
they would have to be. Jazz players would have to be liberal. In other words, they're afraid of any authority figure because they're marginal in a way. They may be talented, but they have a marginal view, a criminal's view of the world. Stay in the line. John Coltrane on the Savage Nation. We're talking about dashing. And as I said to you, think about it before you celebrate too quickly, in that because Daschle was, in essence, owned by those he would have legislated, he may have prevented the wholesale conversion of our medical system into a socialized system. So in other words, yeah, his ethics were bad, but that may have been what we needed in order to prevent outright socialism from taking over the healthcare system entirely. You know, you got to look at the big picture here, the curveball here. There's a curveball. I mean, but he wasn't the right guy because, you know, he was so with the taxes, they had a good. Even the New York Times is a titch, you know. So he's gone. Now, who they're going to replace him with is a strange one. If they get a diehard socialist on the order of Carol Browner of the EPA, look out. And that's my guess is what's coming. Some far left personality is now going to be put up for HHS. So it's, you know, keep your eye on this one. 1-800-449-8255. MichaelSavage.com is the website. American car sales fall below China's for first time. Did you hear this? Did you hear what Bush has done to this country? Don't blame Obama for this one. Bush destroyed the U.S. auto industry with his free trade mania. American car sales fell below China's for the first time. That's what your friend George Bush, the great Republican, did to the auto industry. Make no mistake about it, George Bush bankrupted the U.S. auto industry. I know the unions were greedy, I understand that, but make no mistake about it, I've been calling for tariffs on foreign cars for well over 3 years now. The only thing that could save the U.S. auto industry is tariffs. And I really could care less about a trade war. What do I care about a trade war? Did you read that the so-called stimulus package has a Buy American provision in it, and Obama may override it because the Europeans and the Canadians are threatening to sue us for forcing the government to buy American? Can you believe this? It's unbelievable to me how compromised this country has become. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. Let's go back to our caller, David, the son of jazz musicians out of Wisconsin. David, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Dr. Savage. You know, that Coltrane cut when you came back from the break just brought back so many beautiful memories. My dad's passed now, but I know he's looking down on us here, and he would love you.
So wait, let's just review. Your father was a jazz musician, and your mother, or just dad?
My dad was a musician. My mom was a singer, and she played cocktail drums too. You know,
unbelievable. No, that was amazing. So you grew up on the road with this with these wonderful parents.
Constantly on the road. Worse than probably military brat. More.
So you were like the kid in the club.
Yeah. Oh, I was. I was in the back of the club. You know, just most of the clubs have lounges, and I got stories. You know, a lot of these club owners were.
Did you smoke cigarettes at like age 8 or 9? Hey, a kid, have a cigarette. I mean, come on. They're very loose living people in the musical world.
Shirley Temple. You know.
So how did you wind up somewhat conservative, having come from such a liberal background?
You know, it's really funny too, because Daschle. Who reminds me of it? I don't mean to disrespect, but he reminds me of a dachshund, and the way his demeanor is very just kind of self-centered, and I never understood that. And when I was very liberal,
Daschle always played the low-key, quiet, you know, gentlemanly game. That's what he always played, but he's always been tainted. But what does your background have to do with Daschle, if anything?
Well, because I started to believe in all of the liberal drivel that and that my parents were not very political people, but I started to believe all the liberal drivel. I mean,
in that background, you'd have to grow up extremely left of center. You're around people who are into drugs, not necessarily your parents, but certainly the milieu is a drug milieu, And certainly people in the drug milieu are generally left of center.
Absolutely. And my parents were the only white cats in the band. Everybody else was black and Muslim. And so that's another call. But let me tell you, the dichotomy of the beliefs of my parents and the way I grew up, I started to get political. And I actually became a PETA member and a vegetarian. And one day I said something derogatory about Tom Daschle. And a friend of mine said, well, that's Tom Daschle. You can't talk about Senator Daschle like that. I said, well, he's not making any sense here. Look at this. So I did my own due diligence, Dr. Savage. I looked into
So what you're saying is you dared say the emperor has no clothes, and you were roundly attacked by those who said he has clothing, and it's a beautiful coat of golden threads.
Exactly. Intensely attacked. In fact, so much so that
how old was your dad when he passed? I'm curious. Now you got me interested in your parents more than Daschle. How old was your dad when he passed
71.
On? Oh, well, he didn't. Okay, it's not that old, but at least he made it over that hump at 70, because that's a tough life being a musician on the road. Murder. Really hard. I mean, you know, the money, you don't know where it's coming from. They probably had good years and very bad years, right?
Exactly. And, you know, before he passed, he actually literally bought a farm on the East Coast. And, we love animals and I love to hear your teddy stories and your furry babies. But, you know, he actually bought a farm. We had goats there. And he used to play like the Brothers Four. Skidoobadoobadoobadoobadoobadoobadoobadoobadoobadoobadoobadoobadoobadoobadoobadoobadoobadoobadoobadoobadoobadoobadoobadoobadoobadoobadoobadoobadoobadoobadoobadoobadoobadoobadoobadoobadoobadoobadoobadoobadoobadoobadoobadoobadoobadoobadoobadoobadoobadoobadoobadoobadoobadoobadoobadoobadoobadoobadoobadoobadoobadoobadoobadoobadoobadoobadoobadoobadoobadoobadoobadoobadoobadoobadoobadoobadoobadoobadoobadoobadoobadoobadoobadoobadoobadoobadoobadoobadoobadoobadoobadoobadoobadoobadoobadoobadoobadoobadoobadoobadoobadoobadoobadoobadoobadoobadoobadoobadoobadoobadoobadoobadoobadoobadoobadoobadoobadoobadoobadoobadoobadoobadoobadoobadoobadoobadoobad all the animals.
Oh, that's sweet. That's cute. Is mom still living?
Yes. Yeah.
Good, good, still good. Singing. Well, look, David, it's a beautiful story with wonderful memories, and I hope you don't harbor any ill feelings towards, you know, your parents for their left of center. They would have to have been left of center in that profession. You don't have any misgivings about that, I hope.
None at all. My dad saw the light. He shared a great gift with me, the music. And in fact, my son and I took the challenge to write that Obama song. So we wrote a young Obama and sent it on, emailed it up to you.
Oh, you're kidding. Young Obama had a farm? We got that. Beowulf, did we get that? We got to get young Obama. Oh, we got to get that, David. David, stay on the line, and we'll get it to Beowulf immediately. I'm sending you a copy of Psychological Nudity, David. And if Beowulf can get your email right now, you can send it to him. We're gonna hear the song "Young Obama Had a Farm," E-I-E-I-O, because I asked for the lyric, the lyrics yesterday. San Francisco. See, I'm in such a good mood. I actually said it right today. San Francisco. Marisa, KNEW, welcome to the program.
Michael, I am not surprised at how quickly Obama is revealing himself to be grossly, grossly incompetent. I'm not surprised at all.
Let's talk about that. By picking tax cheats and not vetting these people properly, it's showing a rather inexperienced team around him. This never should have happened. Let's put aside the politics. Let's only talk about the pragmatic ramifications of this fumbling one after the other. It shows an inexperienced campaign that's trying to ramrod appointments and bills too quickly.
I agree.
So, yeah, he's inexperienced, and he's meddling too fast in too many things. He has to learn that this is not Chicago. America's different than Chicago, the country as a whole. You know, it's going to take him a lot more time than he originally thought. Los Angeles, KGIL country. Bridget, welcome to the program. Go ahead, please.
Hello, Dr. Savage. I just wanted to welcome you back to Los Angeles. You're the only intelligent...
Oh, now they pulled me back on the air in Los Angeles. Yeah, I get pulled back and forth in Los Angeles. Bridget, I'm getting a lot of angry mail going to the station down there. They don't want any opinion except the liberal pap they're used to.
It's disgusting. It's like...
All they want is the liberal pap that they're used to reading in the L.A. Times and listening to on... the other stations down there. They really don't want an alternate opinion. They want to continue to live in their West Hollywood bubble.
They don't want an intelligent opinion. They don't.
Well, I have my opinion. I try to back it up with not only with force but with facts. And frankly, Bridget, I love Los Angeles. I'm one of the few people on the West Coast who actually likes L.A. Although I live in the San Francisco area. I go to L.A. quite frequently. I even broadcast from there, and I love the city. I enjoy it very much. I try never to disclose my name going into restaurants because I could do without a poisoning. But by and large, I enjoy being down there.
Can I ask, are you from Brooklyn?
No, please don't insult me.
Excuse me?
Why would you think I'm from Brooklyn? My accent?
Well, yeah, you sound just like my father.
No, you see, Bridget, if you understood Hollywood better, and I'm not criticizing you, you'd understand that a voice coach can do the Bronx and Brooklyn and Manhattan separately and differently. Just as Al Pacino, who has one of the greatest ranges of Hispanic accents in the business. I mean, when he did Carlito and Carlito's Way, he did Puerto Rican New York perfect. I mean, when he did the Cuban American or the Cuban in Scarface, perfect Cuban. See, he can really master the different intonations and the different inflections of the different, even though it's the same language, they're not dialects, they're different inflections. It's the same with New Yorkers. I mean, the Bronx is different than Brooklyn, and Manhattan's different than both. I'm actually born in Manhattan. I'm a Manhattan, though. I don't know if you know that. You don't understand that I actually sound like what New Yorkers should sound like, not like people from Minneapolis who moved to New York. Not that I have anything against Minneapolis, but most of them are from Minneapolis. Thanks for the call. What, could you play Chicago for a minute here? I needed a break right at that point, a perfect timing break. I want to hear Frankie doing that. Hey, did you see this article? Keep playing this. All right, end of downbeat. Chicago. Job prospects unclear for the ousted Blagojevich. This is a screamer. Ousted as Illinois governor looking for a job, Rod Blagojevich returned to national TV today to proclaim his innocence on corruption charges, looking for a future book deal or talk show. The biggest question is who would hire him? Well, my answer is Obama. The man is made for the Obama administration. They're both from the same town. They both work the same political structure. They understand each other. They speak the same language. They both know Rahm Emanuel. I think that they should consider Blagojevich for the head of HHS. He wanted it anyway. He wouldn't have been any worse than Dashley. He's just louder, and he espouses bad old poetry. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Well, in that case, it was sold to American, but now it's sold out to America because your great hero, President Obama, who said he wanted change, has just agreed to drop the Buy American plan in his so-called stimulus plan after the socialist European Union trade ministers threatened a trade war. The EU warned the U.S. against plunging the world into depression by adopting a plan by American policy. This is tearful. It's tearful to me that in our own bailout plan, despite its corruption, there's a Buy American clause, which means that if the government, let's say, builds roads, there's a clause in it that says they have to buy steel from an American steel manufacturer, as you would hope, right? Wouldn't that create jobs? Well, the socialist bums in Europe said they're going to sue us in the world court if American iron and steel must be used in construction projects that form part of the recovery plan. Can you believe this? That our representatives would cater to these child molesters in Europe? Under the Buy American clause passed by the U.S. House of Reps, American iron and steel must be used in construction projects that form part of the recovery plan. But the fact of the matter is the European Union threatened a lawsuits and taking the U.S. to the WTO in order to make sure that we do not buy American, to make us buy what, North Korean steel? Where do they want us to buy steel from? North Korea? Maybe China itself? So that we lose every industry we have? You know, there comes a time that I'll take a trade war. If that's what they want, give them a trade war. I don't understand how we can take this anymore from our so-called leaders when all of them are lobbyists. That's all they are. And Obama's a lobbyist in chief. Make no mistake about it. You're shocked that he appoints 17 lobbyists. You're shocked that he appoints tax cheats. He's the lobbyist in chief. And so, therefore, we the people have to say enough is enough. You're going to put that Buy American plan in the Senate bill, or we're going to go out in the streets and we're going to recall all of you. We're going to do whatever we have to throw you out. You are just a bunch of criminals. If you're going to let these trade ministers from Europe tell us we can't even buy American steel when we're building American roads and bridges, then enough is enough. You're traitors. You're Benedict Arnolds, and we want you out of this country. We'll throw you out by our own hands. Something has to be done. Maybe if a million people marched on Washington with pitchforks, so to speak, metaphorically speaking, we'd scare these criminals. This should be the last straw. This is very much like the... This could be the spark that sets off the Boston Tea Party of our time. The European Union has now threatened President Obama that there will be a trade war if the U.S. goes ahead with the so-called stimulus plan's clause to buy steel from American manufacturers when building a construction, when creating construction projects. They want the steel to come from either Europe or from, I guess, no, I don't know where they want it to come from. The European Commission's powerful trade department, a bastion of open markets, formerly headed by Lord Mandelson, said yesterday that the Buy American clause was the worst possible signal that could be sent to world trade. I said to Lord Mandelson, you should be wearing a barrel around your body, you bum, you. Lord Mandelson, you're no lord to me. You're nothing but a low-life English bum. A spokesmouth in England said, we are particularly concerned about the signal that these measures could send to the world at a time when all countries are facing difficulties. Where America leads, many others tend to follow. Well, that's very good. Here's where we're going to lead. We're going to lead right back to American workers and American manufacturing. And if you don't like it, you can lump it. That's what a president ought to say. Somebody ought to stand up for America instead of standing up for them. President Obama has just agreed to water down Buy American plan after the European child molesters threatened a trade war. Can you believe this? Now, how could a union support a president like this who caves into a European government like that? I ask you, how could unions continue to support Obama when he's already stabbed union workers in the back? Portland, Oregon. Mike, you're on the Savage Nation.
That's exactly my point. How do you explain him carrying the support of all the unions and union workers when he's preventing union jobs as union steelworkers from even happening by supporting this new thing he's come up with by not having to force America.
Well, here's where you as a union worker have to go to your bosses and say trade unions have to demand that a Buy American clause not only stay in there, but it gets stiffer. That in the Senate bill, the Buy American clause is broadened to that 75 or 80% of everything purchased by any of this money be made in America. And I don't care if that's a pair of overalls. I would rather see them be made in a mill in North Carolina or South Carolina than coming out of China. And I think that's the only way to get the people working again. It's the only way to create jobs. And if we don't do this, then you know that the whole stimulus bill is a pile of rubbish.
Exactly right.
Well, this is a job for the unions, not for me. I'm not a union member. I am not a union member, but let me tell you something. Today we should all be American union members. Today we should demand that the unions demand of Obama that he not back down, that he reinstate the Buy American clause, that he not cater to the European Union threats. And he says to them, he should say to them, if you want a trade war, you're going to have a trade war. And that's the end of it. So there it is. Trade unions demanded a tightening of the law on the use of foreign workers as hundreds again walked out, this is in England, at the Lindsay oil refinery in protest at the hiring of Italian and Portuguese workers. And energy workers around the country followed suit. See, that's a real union in England. When trade unions walk out, when they call a national strike to protest the hiring of foreign workers in England, that's what should be going on in America tomorrow. Your unions, you should email them, you should blog them, you should demand that American unions demand that Obama not cave into the Europeans on this. You should cause a national strike right now. The union should go on a national strike. The port should be closed down in this country. That's what a union should be doing. When it comes to protecting their own jobs, you'd think that they would do that, and I hope they do. They should close the ports. The union truck drivers should tie up the highways until the Buy American clause is not only reinserted into the so-called stimulus bill, but broadened to include even a higher percentage of American-only products. That's my opinion. Up next, we're going to talk with the great Senator James Inhofe of Oklahoma, who just came back from Gitmo and can tell you why it must not be closed and why it's purely politics and it makes no sense for our survival. This is the Savage Nation. The phone number here for the next hour, you know, the website's michaelsavage.com. And we're going to play a little music for you on the way out the door. Thanks for listening. I'll be right back.
Chicago. Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
This is the Savage Nation. Here's what I've been talking about today. Dashiell dashed, stimulus loses steam, the Chavez News Network. Well, old Tommy Dashiell withdrew his name from nomination as Secretary of Health and Human Services. It seems like it's another day and another tax fraud for the Obama administration. In fact, Dashiell wasn't the only tax cheat to withdraw from consideration just today. Nancy Kalefer, another Obama nominee, stepped down. Just today, she was nominated to be Deputy Director of Management at the Office of Management and Budget. Her job was to find, well, just about everything. I guess too many Americans decided that a budget manager should actually pay her own taxes. So Dashiell has been dashed, and with him Obama's hopes for getting his current pork-filled stimulus bill through the Senate. If Obama were a butcher, he'd be offering America a cut that was 10%, 9%, 10% meat, and 89, 90% fat. Well, it looks like the Senate will be taking a closer look at his plan before they put anything into the grinder to make the Obama sausages. All right, let's move on. Senator Inhofe and a handful of other lawmakers have just returned from the American detention facility in Guantanamo Bay, Cuba, on a fact-finding mission. But it seems to me that the fact-finding mission should be taking place here in the United States. You see, Barack Obama, in one of his many executive orders, has declared that he wants Gitmo closed. But he hasn't given us a hint on how he intends to accomplish this. Senator Inhofe, welcome to the Savage Nation. What is he thinking?
Well, first of all, the whole idea, Gitmo, we've had that since 1903. It's a resource we absolutely have to have in the United States of America. And the only reason that all these bleeding hearts are trying to do something to close it down is that there's supposedly accusations of using waterboarding and different techniques. It's just an outright lie. That's not the case. They've never done any waterboarding there. And so we can't do it. Let me tell you the problem we've got with it. We have right now 170 people that are incarcerated there that we can't send anyplace because there's no country that will take them back. 110 of those are really the hardened people. One of those is Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, who is the brain power behind 9/11, and four more were his co-conspirators. So these are the most evil people in the world. Now, if we close that down and we don't continue with tribunals, which the Obama didn't want us to do, then it could go into our court system. And, of course, they'd have more constitutional protections there. They would have to actually build new courtrooms because of the nature of the trial. And if they're acquitted, that could turn them loose. And we're talking about turning loose some of the worst terrorists anywhere in the world. One of the places that they might want to send them to replace Gitmo could actually be in my state, Fort Sill. And they named some 17 places around there. So that's the big problem. We have to keep this open, and they are treating them fine. Those people down there have health treatment. They have one practitioner for every two prisoners in terms of doctors and nurses and that type of thing. Best food they've ever had in their lives, and I don't know how people can complain about the treatment of the terrorists down at Guantanamo Bay.
The conventional wisdom about Gitmo, according to the American media, is that it accomplishes nothing in the way of intelligence or security, and is merely a warehouse where prisoners are mistreated. Haven't we gotten actionable intelligence from these detainees at Gitmo?
Well, first of all, I've been there probably more than any other member down at Gitmo. My first trip down there was right after 9/11, when the first bunch of terrorists came in there, and I watched the interrogation system. I watched what they're doing, and they were treating him properly, and really with more caution than I would think that they should, because these are combatants. These are not prisoners. These are not criminals. These are people that they don't represent a country. They represent a philosophy. They want to destroy everyone in America and everything we stand for. And so it's been a huge help. We have been able to capture such as Khalid Sheikh Mohammed as a result of interrogation that took place down at Gitmo. So it's a resource that we need to have. It's got, you know, they can keep up to 1,100 people there, and they're down right now to 245, mostly because of this movement to try to get it closed.
I understand that there are other military prisons outside of the United States. I would say that if he closes down Gitmo, we send them to some other prison away from American shores where they couldn't be choosing which ethnic meal to have at what time and which ACL lawyer they will be using to defend them.
Well, we don't have places that are located where they can do the things that they can do in Gitmo. And right now, let's put it this way. As we escalate our activities and we do our surge in Afghanistan, that's going to bring in a lot more of these terrorists. And the ones that actually are Afghans, they will go to Bagram or to Kandahar. Those are two large prisons that they have in Afghanistan. However, if we catch them and they're from Yemen or someplace else, then they have to go somewhere other than those two prisons. And the only place that they have that they'd be able to put them in is Gitmo. None of the rest of our facilities are adequate to take care of the number of people and the type of treatment that these people need.
The media and some politicians have been linking Gitmo with the idea of torture, and it seems to me that the reason that Obama is closing down Gitmo is not so much for strategic or legal reasons, so much as for symbolic reasons. How much of this is just a feel-good move?
Yeah, it is. First of all, that just isn't true, and all you have to do is go down there. The Red Cross has made regular trips in there. The last trip that they made, they said there's just nothing going on that is at all offensive to anyone. No one should be concerned about it. The other human rights groups have gone in, and everyone says that it's fine. There's been even quite a few media, even Al Jazeera, they were there just a short while ago. And they admitted that people were being treated properly. And yet, and I think you put it right, people are making these accusations, are just some of these do-gooder people that just really want to believe that bad things are happening. Torturing is not going on down there. They're not torturing these people. They are getting information. It's very valuable information. That information has saved American lives. And let's keep in mind, the initial ones that went into Gitmo were people who had killed Americans. So we have to have this resource to take care of this problem. As I said, if you don't do it this way, they can get into our federal court system, and that would be an absolute disaster.
Well, Senator, as a member of the Senate Armed Services Committee, what can you do to guide a more sane policy towards Gitmo? I'll tell you what I'm going to do, what I've been doing for the last 2 weeks. Tell my listeners that it's insane to close Gitmo.
Well, I think a public perception, that's one reason that we're talking right now. I want to make sure that people know the truth. And when they know the truth, I think we'll be able to stop it. One of the things, let's keep in mind, that the president did, he did two things. One was he said, we want you to stop immediately any kind of legal activities that are going on, in other words, court trials and that type of thing. Well, the judge down there told him, we can't do it. We've got to continue. So he took on the president. The second thing he did was saying that we want it closed in 12 months. But he said, we've got to resolve what we're going to do with these hardened terrorists that are down there. Well, that's easy to say, but it's not easy to do. And so I think that gives us a breathing room of 1 year to educate the public and let them know that that we've got to defend America and save Americans first, and the best way to do it is to keep the Gitmo open.
Thank you, Senator Inhofe, for coming on my program to talk about this issue.
Yeah, hey, thank you, Michael Savage, for getting into this issue and some of the other issues that you've gotten into, certainly the global warming hoax and some of the things that they're trying to do against the First Amendment and against talk show hosts. So keep up the good work, and we'll be listening.
This is the Savage Nation.
Savage.
It seems that Obama's change in government that he's been promising isn't much of a change at all. More likely, it seems to be a change to a more corrupt Chicago-style government, only this time on a national level. Why is it that the larger the government gets, the more corrupt, costly, and unproductive it becomes? Daniel Flynn is joining us now to report on his observations.
Thanks, Michael. This is Dan Flynn, author of A Conservative History of the American Left, reporting from the capital city of American liberalism, Boston, Massachusetts, where earlier this week, the third speaker of the State House of Representatives in a row was forced to resign or resigned amidst an ethics corruption scandal. We had first speaker felony tax evasion, and then we had speaker obstruction of justice, and now apparently it looks like we're going to have speaker corruption. Why do we have so much corruption in Massachusetts? Why is this Cook County East? Because the bigger the government, the more the corruption. If you have small, limited constitutional government, there's not going to be a whole lot of power or money there that any corrupt businessman or anyone else wants to have at. But when you have a huge, gargantuan government, you're going to get more corruption. In America, that is what is in store for you in Barack Obama's presidency, because he wants to make it the United States of Massachusetts, the United States of Cook County. That is his mindset when it comes to government. And if you don't believe me, if you think this is hyperbole or overstatement or anything like that, take a look at his stimulus package. And I don't say read it. I'm not a sadist. I don't want you to read the 647-page stimulus package, but just glance at it. Maybe look at some of the executive summaries, and you see that there's $2 billion in research for car batteries. There is $400 million to NASA to fund global warming research. There's $20 billion for food stamps. This is going to stimulate what? I don't think it's going to stimulate the economy. It is the largest single piece, most expensive piece of legislation in the history of the world. Almost $1 trillion. Just to put it in perspective, $1 trillion is basically what the government took in receipts the first year of George H.W. Bush's presidency. And Barack Obama wants to spend that amount of money on one single piece of legislation. There is a reason why news outlets like Time Magazine are calling this the New Deal, or Paul Krugman from the New York Times saying that Barack Obama is Franklin Delano Obama. There are parallels between the old New Deal and the New Deal. They're just not the parallels that the New York Times and Time Magazine and The Nation Magazine are seeing. And the parallels are this. The old New Deal was a dramatic failure, and the New Deal is going to be a dramatic failure as well. The mythology surrounding the New Deal is that it slew the Great Depression, that it killed off the Great Depression. In fact, what it did was made the Great Depression worse. It prolonged it. It made the pain deeper. The gross domestic product of the United States didn't reach 1929 level until midway through World War II. And of course, the Dow Jones Industrial Average didn't reach its 1929 peak until the 1950s. And so all of this talk about the Great Depression being killed off by the New Deal is liberal democratic mythology. Franklin Roosevelt may have inspired some people, just like Barack Obama inspires people, but he didn't kill off the Great Depression. That's myth number one of the folks who are pushing for a New Deal. Myth number two is the idea that capitalism caused the Great Depression. And that, you know, the myth number one is that socialism cured it. Myth number two is that capitalism, in the human manifestation of Herbert Hoover, caused the Great Depression. Well, Herbert Hoover, just like George W. Bush, was a big government progressive. Herbert Hoover raised taxation rates, the top rate, from 24% to 63%. What sort of an acolyte of laissez-faire economics would do that? Herbert Hoover signed the Smoot-Hawley Tariff Act, dramatically increasing tariffs and having the government intervene in the private economy. What proponent of the free enterprise system would do something like that? In fact, when you think about the public works programs that are so associated with the old New Deal, they actually started before Roosevelt. I mean, think Hoover Dam. Why is it called the Hoover Dam? Even the alphabet soup of agencies that we so associate with the New Deal, the CWA, the CCC, the NRA, the AAA, all of that was started under Herbert Hoover. Think about the Reconstruction Finance Corporation and government institutions like that to jumpstart the economy. Herbert Hoover was a big government progressive, just like George W. Bush is. So it's accurate to talk of the Hoover-Roosevelt years, just as it's accurate to talk of the Bush-Obama years. After all of this big government liberalism, the proportion of which we're seeing now, it didn't start under Barack Obama. It started under George W. Bush. At least the ratcheting up of it started under George W. Bush, where he had, you know, he signed into law the prescription drug care plan, which was the biggest government entitlement since the Great Society. George W. Bush reintroduced a word foreign to the American lexicon for several generations, nationalization. He nationalized airport security. He nationalized, or partly nationalized, two of the biggest auto manufacturers, the largest insurance company in the world, the nine of the largest banks in the United States. And then, of course, as his encore to his horrible presidency, George W. Bush signed into law the largest, the most expensive piece of legislation in world history, the banker bailout plan. And isn't it appropriate that George W. Bush, he spent the first half of that bailout, and Barack Obama is spending the second half. The transition is seamless. They don't clash. These are two guys that have the same outlook on economics. Barack Obama championed that bailout on Capitol Hill. George W. Bush signed it into law at the White House. So you have, on the one hand, the Hoover Roosevelt years, and on the other hand, you have the Bush-Obama years. So yes, this may be a new deal, and yes, the media may be right. There are parallels between now and then. They're just not the parallels that they are seeing. And Michael, and listeners of the Savage Nation, I am sure you have heard this expression before, that the definition of a fool is someone who does the same thing over and over again, expecting a different result. And anyone out there who wants to have a new deal, who wants to have a replay of the New Deal and is expecting anything else but an economic catastrophe, is a fool. Thank you so much, Michael Savage, for having me on. Thank you, Savage Nation. I am Dan Flynn, author of A Conservative History of the American Left. Back to you, Michael.
Thanks, Daniel. I hope that the Chicagoization of America does not take hold and we can stop it before it's too late.
Savage.
President Bush framed the war on terror conceptually in a way that was very broad, war on terror, and he used sometimes certain terminology that alienated many people, Islamofascism. Right. You've always framed it in a different way, specifically against one group called Al-Qaeda and their collaborators. And is this one way of
I think that you're making a very important point, and that is that the language we use matters. And what we need to understand is that there are extremist organizations, whether Muslim or any other faith in the past, that will use faith as a justification for violence. We cannot paint with a broad brush a faith as a consequence of the violence that is done in that faith's name.
I told you last week that Obama talking first to Arab TV, Jihad TV, was a mistake for our president. To speak with any foreign media outlet as his first sit-down formal interview was a slap in the face for the entire nation. I know that I'm not the only one that feels this way. Joining us today is Jeff Kuhner from the Washington Times to give us his reaction to this interview.
Thanks, Michael.
This is Jeff Kuhner, the last honest man in Washington at the Washington Times, coming at you with his weekly special report to the Savage Nation. This week, I want to talk to you and to all of your listeners about a column that I wrote on Sunday called Lethal Olive Branch. For your listeners out there, you can just go punch in K-U-H-N-E-R. In that column, I discuss Obama's first formal television interview. And what first disturbed me, Michael, is that this interview was conducted not to CNN, not to Fox News, not to CBS, not to ABC. In other words, not to American media outlets, but to a foreign Arabic language television satellite station by the name of Al Arabiya. And in that interview, Barack Obama made his grand outreach to the Muslim world. And as he openly told the Muslim world, he apologizes for the mistakes that America has made. As he put it, "I know we have not been perfect." But he wants to tell the Muslim world that in Barack Obama, they now have a friend and they now have an ally. And as he put it, Michael, he now wants to create a new strategic partnership with the Muslim world, a partnership based on mutual interests and mutual respect. And Michael, what I found most disturbing as an American listening to this is Obama has nothing to apologize for. To me, this is what was most galling and pathetic about the entire interview that he gave. Here he is, the President of the United States, the leader of the free world, groveling, begging, pleading to these Arab tin pot dictators, to these corrupt kleptocrats who have been robbing their people for generations, looting, plundering, oppressing them, murdering minorities, waging wars upon their neighbors, seeking the destruction of Israel. And we, the United States, we are to apologize to them. This, to me, was, I found, the most galling of everything that he said in his statement.
It's insane. Only a more savage nation can survive, and here we've turned to the left.
But more than that, Michael, his statements to me again reveal the fundamental naivete at the heart of Obama and at the heart of the liberal worldview. And it is this, that somehow the world consists of friends. Everybody is a friend. Everybody is a potential ally. All we need to do is change our behavior, show greater understanding, greater appreciation, greater sensitivity. And somehow the Muslim world will love us. The Arab street will love us. The leaders in Iran, Hamas, Hezbollah, Syria, they will all love us because we love them in return. And this, I believe, is a formula for disaster. And Michael, here is what I say to Barack Obama, and here is what I say to the liberals in the State Department and to Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid. We, the United States, have nothing to apologize for. It was America that has done more to liberate Muslims in the entire world than any other country. Under George Bush himself, we have liberated 27 million Muslims and Kurds from Saddam's fascist dictatorship. We liberated 23 million Afghans from the theocratic barbarism of the Taliban. We saved Pakistan from falling into the hands of Muslim extremists. And across the African continent, not hundreds of thousands, but millions of African Muslims have been saved from the scourge of AIDS, a slow, starving, painful, debilitating death because of the generosity of George Bush and our aggressive efforts to apologize.
I don't believe this.
We are somehow now to go to these murderous thugs who literally have the blood of millions of people on their hands. And I'm talking about the Saudis. I'm talking about Iran's Nazi leader, Mahmoud Ahmadinejad. I'm talking about the butcher in Damascus, Bashar Assad. I'm talking about the terrorist thugs in Hezbollah, the terrorist thugs in Hamas, the dictatorship in Egypt, the Muslim Brotherhood, every single one of them. We are now to apologize to the Muslim world? Shame on you, Barack Obama. Shame on you.
Why are we so surprised at what Obama's doing?
Here is the dirty deed, Michael. Here is, I believe, the sticking point that I think will unravel all of Obama's diplomacy, and it will blow up in his face. And Michael, I want to go officially on the record here, and you can hold me, and all of your listeners can hold me accountable for this prediction. Barack Obama will be a one-term president. He will be in the office for 4 years, just like Jimmy Carter. And here is why. It was Iran that destroyed Jimmy Carter's presidency. It was Iran that broke him. When the Ayatollah Khomeini and his Islamist thugs seized power in Iran and then took our diplomats hostages, and Carter was then reduced to a paper tiger, wringing his hands, unable to do anything, unwilling to take military action. It is now Iran again that will break a liberal Democrat president. Because Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, as Obama speaks, every day, every week, he comes closer to a nuclear bomb. And now we know he is less than a year away, and the clock is ticking. And as he has said again and again, he will use this bomb to destroy the state of Israel. As he put it, to destroy this rotting, corrupt Zionist entity. And the Jews this time will not go quietly into the night. They will not allow themselves to be sent into the gas ovens. They will not go quietly this time. This time, they are on the verge of electing a right-wing, conservative strongman in Benjamin Netanyahu, a warrior for Israel, a warrior for Jewish national interests, a warrior for Western civilization, somebody who knows the Islamist enemies that he is facing. And Bibi Netanyahu will stand up to Mahmoud Ahmadinejad. And when Ahmadinejad has the bomb and he threatens to use it, Israel will respond. And they will defend Western civilization. And Obama will be reduced again, like Jimmy Carter, to a paper tiger. And Mahmoud Ahmadinejad will then show to the world the impotency of the United States. And then the American people will have this fundamental question. Will we or will we not be a great superpower? Will we come to the aid of our ally Israel? Or will we allow them to face a potential nuclear holocaust on their own? That is the question that we will be facing.
Well, what more is there to be said?
Michael, let me just leave you with this. And I want to say this to all of the American soldiers out there. You have been nothing less than heroic for the last 7 years. We sent you into Afghanistan and you brought liberty where there was tyranny. We sent you into Iraq, where you now, with the recent elections, again shown, we have put a great democracy in the heart of the Arab world, a shining example to everybody else in the region. And now you have a commander-in-chief that no longer believes in you, that says openly throughout his entire presidential campaign that this was a great mistake, that Iraq was the wrong war at the wrong place at the wrong time. But when Iran gets the nuclear bomb, when Israel is now facing existential existence, it again will be the American soldier in Iraq, which borders Iran, that will have to be called into action. And that very same president, that very same liberal Democrat that disparaged your efforts, that mocked your efforts, that undermined you at every turn, he will then come to you and he will ask you one more time to defend America, to defend the West, and to defend everything that is good and true and beautiful. And again, you will answer the call. And that's why I want you to know that in Washington, D.C., you have no stronger ally, you have no stronger friend than Jeff Kooner at the Washington Times. May God bless all of you, and Michael, may God bless all of your listeners. This is Jeff Kooner, the last honest man in Washington, doing his weekly special report for the Savage Nation. Back to you, Michael.
Thanks, Jeff. Our military is one of the last great products that we have left in this country. I pray that Obama the Magnificent will not weaken the military as much as his Democrat predecessors did. This is the Savage Nation. Savage.
I just got off the phone with Tom Daschle, and it was an emotional conversation. He was clearly, it sounded as though he were tearful, overwrought. He said, I read the New York Times this morning, and I realized that I can't pass health care if I am too much of a distraction. And when I saw what the Republicans were saying and read the New York Times, I called the president this morning. And then he said, I've got to go.
The withdrawal of Tom Daschle as nominee to head the Department of Health and Human Services is a real victory for America, a victory for conservatives. Remember that. It's a victory for the Savage Nation. But you who are longtime listeners to the Savage Nation know that it is not the first victory. When George W. tried to give away our port security to Dubai, the Savage Nation stopped it. When Kennedy McCain tried to shove amnesty for illegal aliens down the throats of the American people, the Savage Nation helped stop that as well. When Bush appointed an inexperienced liberal woman to the Supreme Court, Harriet Myers, it was the Savage Nation that called her a nonentity, put the pressure on, and her name was withdrawn. Time and again, you have seen the power of this program, although we are not credited with it, the power of real conservatives banding together for a common cause works. We are the last best hope for America. We are the last bulwark against the rising tide of liberalism, and today is another triumph. Furthermore, this is a defeat for the extremism of Barack Obama. Nominating a single tax cheat would have been bad enough in itself, but nominating three liberals who refused to pay taxes themselves, in spite of the fact that they demand an increased tax burden for you, was too much hypocrisy for even the leftists to stand. Barack Hussein Obama got so caught up in his own self-delusion, his own self-serving media adulation, that he thought he could get away with anything. Today, Obama has learned definitively that he cannot. The withdrawal of Tom Daschle's name has knocked the halo off of Obama's head. His aura of sainthood and invincibility is gone forever. And America, even liberal America, is finally waking up to the fact that he's not the next Messiah, but just another Marxist. Let's put that aside. The cost of illegals. Interestingly, in the Los Angeles Times the other day, the author was trying to disprove the idea that illegal aliens were a drain on the economy in California. But the interesting thing about the article was that even if you use the deliberately lowball numbers he employs to talk about how much illegal aliens cost both the state of California and the United States, it's clearly an enormous problem at high cost. The liberal L.A. Times says California spends almost $1 billion on illegal aliens in prison, $1 billion on prison. It says California spends $500 million on welfare for illegals. It says California spends $750 million on health care for illegals. And even the far-left Los Angeles Times says California spends $4 billion on education for the children of illegal immigrants. If even this outlet of the government media complex is willing to admit to a more than $6 billion price tag for illegal aliens, what do you think the real cost is? 2 to 3 times that? Even the LA Times admits they are a drain on the budget. But if we think about the fact that most liberal teachers refuse to ask students if they're illegal aliens, if we think about the fact that the prison system probably underestimates the percentage of prisoners who are illegal aliens, if we think about the fact that most hospitals will not ask and are in fact forbidden by law to ask about the legal status of people who come into the emergency room, if we take all of these things into consideration, then we can probably assume that the actual cost of illegal aliens is 3 to 4 times greater than the liberals admit that it is. And this is just one state. This is a major national problem. This is a major national emergency. And Obama should not be giving more money to illegal aliens in the form of a phony stimulus package. He should be deporting them from the country so that we don't need a stimulus bill at all. Shame on the governors for not telling you the truth about the high cost of illegal aliens. Anything else about Obama that you're a little intimidated or afraid of or don't like? Are you still of the opinion that we should give him a chance, give him 100 days? If we had listened to that brainwashing, well, give him 100 days, give him a chance. In 1 week, he passed five executive orders. 1 week, five executive orders, try to shove a pork barrel bill down our throats that your grandchildren will be paying for. And we're supposed to give him 100 days. Had we not stood up to him, there wouldn't be a country left in 100 days. Right now, the guy is humbled. Maybe he'll start to understand this is the real world, that it's not Chicago. Play Chicago by Frank Sinatra. That's all. How are you? How are you? How are you?
Chicago, Chicago, that toddling town. Chicago, Chicago, I will show you around. I love it. Bet your bottom dollar you lose the blues in Chicago, Chicago, the town that Billy Sunday couldn't shut down.
Here's what's on michaelsavage.com. Now, you know about Dashiell being dashed. I came up with that this morning. That was lifted by one of the sock puppets on Fox News. Thanks for listening. Did you know about the story halfway down on the right about a man who pled guilty to raping a six-year-old boy at a Massachusetts public library while he was on probation? You got to read this whole story. We found his picture. It took some doing, but we found the rapist's picture. You're not going to believe the story when I tell it to you, but it's sickening, and it's another judge in Massachusetts who himself should be thrown off the bench. You see, this guy, Corey Dean Saunders, is 27 years old. He entered the plea Monday to child rape and related charges. He was arrested January 30th after luring the boy to the magazine stacks in the New Bedford library while the child's mother worked on a computer just a few feet away. You know what the child said? The little boy said, "The assault was like being attacked by a T-Rex and an alligator." Here's the shocker. This rapist was on probation after serving 4 years in prison for the attempted rape of a seven-year-old. But wait, he was released in 06 over the objections of prosecutors who are allowed under state law to ask that sex offenders be locked up indefinitely. Three psychologists, normally liberal, supported the commitment request. They said he will go back to doing it. But the psycho judge granted him probation, citing his lack of sexual crimes while in prison. Of course, you schmuck judge. There are no six-year-old boys in prison. I think this judge should be immediately arrested and indicted. Another story on michaelsavage.com that is not to be missed is this one. Obama's spokesman defends ethics standards. Could you believe this? Ethics? Obama? Cows in Berkeley? Are you kidding me? Moo. Where are the ethics so far? 17 lobbyists, 5 executive orders, 3 tax dodgers. If that's Obama's idea of ethics, look out. With God's will and your listenership, I shall return.
Savage.